Hello, and welcome to Life Matters, the program where we engage life issues with critical thinking and a biblical worldview. Life Matters is an educational outreach resource of Assure Women's Center in Omaha, Nebraska. We're honored to host a variety of guests within the pro-life movement, each bringing their own unique perspectives, experiences, and backgrounds. The views and opinions expressed by our guests do not necessarily reflect those of Life Matters, Assure Women's Center, or our affiliates. Our goal is to foster open, thoughtful dialogue around life-affirming issues and equip listeners to stand for life.
Welcome to Life Matters. I'm your host, Toni Clark, Executive Director of Assure Women's Center in Omaha. Today, we're joined by Dr. Marie Beelen, a board-certified pediatrician and fellow of the American Academy of Pediatrics. She has spent more than 15 years caring for families in Omaha and now serves patients through her practice, In-Home Peds. Dr. Beelen is a wife, mom of four, and serves on Assure's Advisory Council. Dr. Beelen, thank you so much for joining us today.
I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, great. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Me too.
Can you share a little about your background and what led you into pediatrics?
Sure. I grew up in Lincoln, Nebraska. So I think I'm a fifth generation Nebraskan, Okay. Maybe. In high school, became interested in wanting to do research in genetic diseases. I had a friend that had diabetes, and it was in the 90s. And so right when the Human Genome Project was coming out, and this idea that we'd be able to fix everything that was broken in humans with just a little snip here and a little snap there. And so that's what I decided I wanted to study. So I went to Princeton University, where they don't really have big graduate programs. It's all undergraduate focused. So I was able to do research in genetics there as an undergrad, and quickly realized that I hated that. It was way too big picture. I'm not tenacious enough. Yeah. I could not stand the idea of spending my whole life working on a protein that was a dead end. Yeah. That seemed meaningless to me. I realized I need to see Timmy every day and help Timmy. And that's small, but for me, it was big. So that's when I shifted and decided to go into medicine. And then in medical school, also, it was very clear that I had zero sympathy for adults and their medical issues. I just kept thinking, stop smoking. It's so simple. And I thought I would hate me as a doctor. I'm so judgmental. But kids are just the opposite. It's never their fault. They don't want to be sick. They want to be better. And so I just had all the sympathy in the world for kids. So that's where I went. Good. It was very clear.
I'm sure your patients are grateful that you didn't get into the genos and to the adults.
So. Well, and clearly it wouldn't have happened in my lifetime. So it was a good decision.
That's good. So you spent your career caring for children and walking closely with families. How has that shaped your perspective on the value of life?
It has broadened my perspective so much on the purpose of life, and that every life has meaning. No one is a mistake. I have been touched and shaped and formed by children who have never been able to look me in the eye or say, hi, Dr. Beelen. Some of my most impactful encounters are with patients that are averbal, that can't walk, but they are precious. And I see how they are forming those around them, including me, in better ways. I am more patient and kind and gentle, more loving, because they are in my world. And I am so grateful.
I think we could all use a dose of that from time to time.
Absolutely.
Yeah. As a pediatrician, you see firsthand the development, the vulnerability and uniqueness of every child. You kind of talked about that a little bit. How does that influence the way you think about life before birth?
In many ways. One, my patients constantly surprise me. I think I know the diagnosis, therefore I know what the textbook says is their trajectory and what they'll be capable of and what they'll accomplish in life. And I have been very guilty in the past of putting patients in a box. And then there's nothing better than when they explode my box and prove me and all the doctors and all the wisdom of the world wrong. And there's nothing more true or that proves that more than our prenatal diagnostic techniques. to be told, I've had multiple families not just be told lab results, you know, of you have a 60% chance that your child has this genetic disorder. Yeah. First of all, what does someone do with that?
Yeah.
What does 60% even mean? Mm-hmm. It's either 100% your child or not.
Right.
But even more dramatically, I have seen ultrasound results that they are not the same. That is not the baby that is born. You know, a ultrasound result of a horrible heart defect, mm-hmm. and the child is born with a completely normal formed heart.
Nice.
It can happen the opposite too. My firstborn, we were told a perfect ultrasound, 10 fingers and 10 toes, and he was born missing two fingers. They mm-hmm. counted his left hand twice, apparently, and mm-hmm. so. We are far from perfect.
Yeah.
Medicine is a great guide, and predictions can help, I think, parents plan and prepare their hearts.
Yeah.
But no one is 100% accurate except the great physician, and he
yeah.
can do extraordinary things. And when we are making decisions based on partial truths, partial information, there's nothing more tragic than that.
Yeah. Well, I can only imagine. I think about people that make decisions based on diagnostics and then realize, man, I didn't need to make that decision.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That would be heartbreaking.
So heartbreaking.
Yeah.
I think a lot of times doctors, in wanting to, no one wants to give a family a life sentence, you
yeah.
know, of difficult.
Mm-hmm.
We live in a culture of convenience,
yeah.
and none of us want to inconvenience anyone else. And so I understand where a lot of the providers are coming from. They really are trying to do their best,
yeah.
but they're not viewing that precious life as a life when
Absolutely.
They're giving this advice of, you know, do you really want to have to care for this child into mm-hmm. their adulthood, you know, or whatever?
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
one, that's maybe not true.
Yeah.
And then two, where's the offer of let us introduce you right. to a family who's been right. blessed
yeah.
by a child with this condition
right.
So that you're really actually making an informed decision instead of one based on fear?
Yeah. I interviewed a young lady who was born with many birth defects,
mm.
and her parents were encouraged to abort. And so in interviewing her, she's in her 30s, and she said, you know, my life is good for me. You know,
yes.
people just assume that she's not having a good life, but she says, I've been blessed with a great life.
Absolutely.
And I just thought that was so interesting from her perspective. We're looking at her thinking, what kind of life is she having?
Yes.
You know, and she's like, I've had a great life. Don't pity me, you
yep.
know? And so I think sometimes, like you said, we want to excuse people or kind of cushion people from living those hard lives. But it can be a blessing.
Absolutely.
It can be a blessing.
Absolutely. You're so right. We bring so many preconceived notions
yeah.
to the table because of we can't think of it a different way. I
right.
see that. I've learned so much from my patients that are in the deaf community.
Mm-hmm.
So many of them are worried that their child will have hearing
mm-hmm.
Because they see their deafness as this great gift.
Yeah.
I know that was true for my son without his fingers. My husband's played Division I basketball and is a piano player. And so when he was born, we both realized we had expectations for our child
yeah.
that we never would have said them out loud.
Right.
But once we realized, you know, my husband's first thought was, oh, he won't play basketball. And it was a real challenge for him because my husband could not imagine
mm-hmm.
life as a man
yeah.
without being this amazing athlete.
Yeah.
It has never occurred to my son he's done it his way
yeah.
and does not see it as a deficit at
yeah.
all and
yeah.
loves the way his hand is structured.
Yeah.
And we've even had conversations about, you know, do you think, how many fingers do you think you'll have in heaven, you know,
mm-hmm.
in a redeemed and,
right.
Perfect body.
Yeah.
His might not include those fingers because
yeah.
he kind of likes it without it. He's
right.
able to get into jars and do things that we can't do. So
he's unique.
It is. Unique, but when we don't allow that uniqueness,
right.
that's when
miss out on it.
Yeah,
yeah.
We're putting our expectations on
mm-hmm.
others.
Yeah, that's good. Was there a particular moment or season when life issues became more personal or important to you?
I think probably during my first pregnancy
yeah.
when I was offered the quad screen. And just with my medical background, I knew what it was for. And the way it was presented to me of this is what we do. And so my follow-up question being, and if it's abnormal, then what do we do? And of course the answer was, well, then we abort the baby. And so I said, well, if that's never on the table for me and I'm carrying this child to term, Lord willing, no matter what, then why would we do this? And that I could tell that was not a conversation that I'd had very often with my wonderful obstetrician. I mean, just it probably even I would consider my my first obstetrician very pro-life as well, but just hadn't thought through when exactly does life begin. And sometimes we just do things in medicine without fully thinking through the repercussions. And that was the first one for me, realizing I don't care what this test result shows. And at least for me, and everyone can make different decisions, but for me and how my brain works and my anxiety and stress, I did not think it would be helpful for me to anticipate for the next, what would it have been, like 25 weeks, is there, you know, a 60% chance of Down syndrome, you know, what does that mean? Do I quit? Do I personally didn't need that much prep time. I would have just course corrected at the moment of birth. But yeah, that was probably the first time that I realized, no, I've thought of this baby. We didn't know if it was a boy or a girl at that point, but this is a real person. We've already picked a name, just need to know what gender it is. And no one's taking Simon or Whitney from me. Those were our two names, and it ended up being a Simon. But yeah, that was the first time I medically had really thought through what we do in medicine.
That's a good point. That's a good point. I think back to I was considered a geriatric pregnancy because I was a little older in life, and I wasn't working at Assure. I can't even say that I really, I mean, I was a believer, but we didn't talk about pro-life issues. So I can't say that I was pro-life, but I remember being asked that same question and I said, no, what difference does it make? You know, I still carry the term. And so people have asked me, when did I know I was pro-life? I would maybe say that was when, for me as well, because it was, it definitely was a no, I don't need that test because I'm not going to do anything different. So interesting.
Yeah, it is.
Life Matters is the program where we engage life issues with critical thinking and a biblical worldview. And it is a ministry of Assure Women's Center. To learn more about the ministry of Assure, visit firststeptolife.com. That's firststeptolife.com. There you can learn about the many services we provide, including how we come alongside abortion-minded mothers and empower women to choose life for her and her baby.
You're listening to Life Matters with Tony Clark. Today we're talking with Dr. Marie Beelen, pediatrician and member of Assure's Advisory Council. We've been discussing her heart for life, the importance of instilling life values in the next generation, and the medical and cultural concerns surrounding the abortion pill. How did your upbringing and family influence your understanding of the dignity and value of every human life?
You know, that's interesting with your story. My mom had a similar story with my younger brother. It was, she was old enough that at the time in the 80s, her obstetrician was not even, there wasn't even a test. It was, you should abort this baby. He's clearly going to have Down syndrome because you're so old. And I guess I remember her telling us that story of that it just never occurred to her that that she would never have wanted to do that. And I think growing up, and then my little brother is wonderful and does not have Down syndrome. He would have been wonderful either way, but but he does not, quite the opposite. And just knowing, I'm so grateful to her for one, trusting God more than doctors, but also just trusting, We are such a culture of control, and we want to minimize every risk possible. Yes. And we want to control how we age and how quickly we get places. And we want everything to be guaranteed in life. And that my mom was open to being inconvenienced by a human that was being brought into our family, and to then see what a wonderful inconvenience he is. Yeah. I cannot imagine the world without my little brother. And I think all of us have that experience. Yeah. And when you think of just generation after generation of children that were not born because their parents made a different decision is really heartbreaking.
Yeah, absolutely. In what ways did your faith shape how you view your role as a physician?
It's everything. Praise God that he has continued to grow and sanctify me over the years so that I don't put God in his Sunday box, it really does touch every part of my life. I can't imagine doing my job with the tragedies, the difficult diagnosis, diagnoses, just the struggling families too, broken families. I don't know how to do it without the strength of the Lord and without a hope of something greater. Yeah. There's so much darkness in the world, and I feel like his role for me in what I do is just pushing back against it with his help of just a little bit of light into these dark places, a little bit of hope, a little bit of shining a light on maybe even a different way of doing something that I know is bathed and birthed in God's wisdom and therefore is good and true for anyone, whether they are choosing to walk with Christ or not.
Well, I'm just grateful for you and other pro-life doctors or other believing doctors, because there's something about knowing that your doctor is praying for you.
Yes.
You know, my chiropractor, when I go, you know, we can talk about, I will tell him, you know, I looked at my calendar and you're on and I prayed for you this morning. And he can say, well, I've been praying for you too. You know, I was thinking about what's going on with you. I just love that, you know, that ability to have a doctor that is, you know, that they're praying for you and that they are trusting God for your treatment as well.
Yes.
It doesn't rest on you, it rests on the wisdom that he gives you.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
So thank you so much for what you do.
Well, and thank mentors before me. I still remember the first time I saw a doctor praying with a patient. He was an eye surgeon when I was a resident. And before he took the patient back for surgery, he prayed to the great physician who was actually going to be doing the surgery and should he choose to heal his patient and guide his hands. And I thought, one, I wonder, does that like strike fear into the hearts of some patients that they're like, wait, aren't you in control?
Right.
But I just thought it was so beautiful and real and honest.
Yeah.
And so have tried to model that. The first to admit, you know, for me, it's much smaller scale. No one's, you know, I'm not performing surgery on anyone, but, you know, predicting a child's height, that is the one I get all the time. I'm like, well, if everything stays the same, then I'm guessing he'll be 6 foot, but I am not God. And that's how I do it.
That's good. That's good. Some people need to hear that. Oh, my goodness. Today, we're seeing major shifts in how our culture talks about and approaches abortion. From your perspective, what concerns you most right now?
I am just so floored and so frustrated with the medical community, with how loose and free and frankly dangerous we've gotten with mail order chemical abortions. Miscarriages, natural miscarriages are dangerous and traumatic and often deadly. And 1 out of 10 women who has a miscarriage ends up needing some kind of surgical intervention to save her life. And the fact that now doctors are able to just mail order these medications to women to take at home alone without any medical supervision is just wrong. And the lack of consent for these women, the lack of explanation of what is going to actually happen to their body and their baby. Yeah. The lack of concern for where has this baby implanted? How far along is this pregnancy? The last menstrual period is not an accurate predictor. She could be much further along than she even knows. And to set her up for that sort of dangerous situation where she could lose her fertility for the rest of her life, she could lose her life, is so the opposite of the oath we took in medical school of first do no harm. It blows my mind. I don't know how we got here, that we are so obsessed with convenience and not wanting to be just so pro-abortion that I feel like we've put blinders on for the safety of that woman.
Yeah, we certainly see our share of young ladies who are contemplating ordering the abortion pill or already have it in their pockets, and so it is something that we're seeing on a greater level as well. So from chemical abortion is becoming more common and more accessible. Our center personally has gone as far as to push the button and put our credit card in.
Yep.
It's just that easy. We haven't paid for it, but we certainly have gotten to that point where we could have. And so it's very accessible. I don't think people sometimes realize how accessible it is. Mm-hmm. But from a medical standpoint, can you explain what the abortion pill is and how it works?
Yeah. Well, first, it's two pills. So both created for different purposes and have been kind of reshuffled to cause an abortion. So one of them blocks the hormone that the baby is creating called progesterone. And in blocking that, then it tricks the body into thinking that the baby has died. Mm-hmm. And so the next step, and that happens actually, I think like a third of the time when a woman conceives, a third of the time it ends in a miscarriage. Mm-hmm. And so it's attempting to trick the body into thinking that there's been a miscarriage. And so then the natural next step would be for the uterus to lose its lining and for the baby to be flushed out with a pretty heavy flow. Yeah. To help that process along is the second pill, which is actually was originally designed to treat ulcers. Mm-hmm. It also happens to hit the same receptor that causes the uterus to contract. And so then you have these contractions that help the blood to get forced out and the baby to get forced out as well, and the baby to be delivered with the normal just blood flow.
Yeah.
There's some countries and some that will just give the pill that causes the contractions because that one is so cheap and because it's easy to prescribe for quote unquote ulcers for a woman, but you're actually then giving it to induce an abortion.
Yeah, wow. Well, I was just at a convention last week, and that was one of the things they talked about, that many people are starting to give just the second pill, which brings on a long list of complications.
Huge.
Yeah. Can you share some of the physical risks or complications associated with the abortion pill that women may not be fully aware of?
Yeah. I mean, the biggest one is hemorrhaging.
Yeah.
So I think 20% of women who try to do a chemical abortion at home will end up in an ER hemorrhaging. And if they get there fast enough, and if the hemorrhaging is just quote unquote just from the uterus, there's medications that the ER doctors can give to stop that. But a lot of times the woman is bleeding because the baby has actually implanted in the fallopian tube or somewhere else outside the uterus. And so in inducing that abortion, now they have essentially an open wound bleeding inside their body. And so that's where nothing can correct it except surgery. Yeah. And that's where 1 out of 10 will often end in a surgical correction of some sort. And that's if the woman goes to the hospital. Right. Now, a lot of times if they were already hiding this pregnancy from a loved one, whether it's a parent or a spouse or a partner, they won't seek medical care and just kind of curl up in the bathroom and hope for the best. And that's where then they can bleed out and die. a lot of those, so hemorrhaging or bleeding out is my greatest fear for these women. But if they do need a surgical procedure, that will often involve removal of their uterus, removal of their fallopian tube, their other reproductive organs, which then has consequences where they will never be able to have a child now. So anyone that has had a friend with the tragedy of what we call an ectopic pregnancy, where the baby implants not in the uterus, but somewhere else, a lot of those friends never are able to conceive or have children in the future. And so making these life-changing decisions without being fully consented of the consequences is just wrong.
And that's just the physical risk and complications. What are the emotional and psychological impacts that you think are often overlooked in these conversations?
I think they're completely overlooked. It is so so tragic that that these women are going through this alone, without the support that they need, not making a full consented decision, and then either, you know, dealing with the consequences on their own of cleaning up their own blood, cleaning up their own baby, all by themselves, the trauma of that, or ending up in the hospital and the, what was I thinking? Why did I do this? Everyone knows now anyway. And I think we all are learning more and more in our current society, whether it's the body keeps a score or trauma-informed care, we're learning that these events in our life that we hold secret, they, if they stay in the dark, they still affect us.
Please join us next week for part two of our interview with Dr. Marie Beelen. Life Matters is an educational outreach resource of Assure Women's Center in Omaha, Nebraska. To learn more about the ministry of Assure, visit firststeptolife.com. That's firststeptolife.com. There you can learn about the many services we provide, including how we come alongside abortion-minded mothers and empower women to choose life for her and her baby, as well as find our most current broadcasts and all of our past episodes. You can also find information on our website about how you can partner with us in the life-saving work of Assure. Thanks for listening to Life Matters. Join us again next week at the same time right here on BOT Radio Network.